DW.
As the evening draws to an end and the orange-crimson sunset colours fall over Kobane, Farid tends his shop, where he sells a variety of chocolate snacks, tea, coffee, cigarettes and soft drinks. The premises are simple-looking, three concrete walls with a shutter facing the main street, one of many generic-looking businesses in this de facto autonomous region of northern Syria. Prior to any serious conversation taking place, Farid offers me a coffee. Nothing can start without the customary tea or coffee, and here at Farid's shop, this is no different. Now and again, someone pops in to purchase an item or two. Farid started to sell weapons back in 2014 when IS's threat grew in the region, which culminated in the Battle of Kobani. Farid fought in the battle. Weapons were smuggled over the Turkish border and through the corrupt Free Syrian Army. In Kobani, the light weapons could be bought from shop owners or someone would bring the weapons to YPG fighters. Gun permits were not rigorously enforced at the time, since the police force of the autonomous cantons within the Democratic Federation of Northern Syria was small. But when did the idea materialize to start selling weapons?
Prior to weapon smuggling, I had a large market and had a license to sell gas cylinders, and I was happy with that income. But later, the Syrian pound dropped in value against the dollar. That's when I started to buy weapons off the Free Syrian Army and sell them to our Kurdish brothers here. This was good business. But now that the weapons market has gone quiet again, I've returned to selling goods.
With his business doing well and no real threat in and around Kobani, Farid says he doesn't sell weapons anymore, though he didn't say what and how many weapons he owns, nor how exactly the weapons were smuggled over the Turkish border.
With the beginning of the revolution, weapons came from Aleppo and Homs. These weapons were bought from the Free Syrian Army and from smugglers coming across the Turkish border.
The Kurds fought IS during a five-month battle over Kobani, which ended in 2015. Those weeks of fighting are still very much ingrained in the Kurdish psyche. They fought tooth and nail for each street corner and house.
On June 25th, 2015,
there was a massacre in Kobani. One of the reasons for the massacre is that people didn't have weapons to protect themselves. People are afraid of this happening again. That's why they have bought guns.
So, how much is a weapon?
The buying and selling of weapons is much slower and quieter now. A 7mm Czech Republic Star is 200,000 Syrian pounds. That's about $400. There are also many types of Kalashnikovs with prices ranging from $200 to $400. A 14-bullet gun, which we call a standard, is $1,000.
The average wage in the de facto autonomous region of northern Syria is in the region of $50 per month. Farid didn't say how much he earned in selling weapons. 30-year-old Korker Mustafa comes from the west countryside of Kobane. He was a gun dealer, but recently, with the stabilization of the region, demand for weapons has dropped. Mustafa now works as a driver. He stopped selling guns a while ago. He says he doesn't need a gun in Kobani as it is safe, but he takes it with him when traveling to other areas in the northern autonomous region. Over the past 2 years, he's come across some unusual weapons.
Kalashnikovs made in East Germany, the Soviet Union and China. NATO-issue pistols used in the Turkish army. The oldest model I saw was a Kalashnikov 56, and also a Kalashnikov that was produced more than 30 years ago. That's older than me.
Kobani, for some time now, has experienced a period of peace and tranquility, as opposed to other Syrian cities, where the region's volatility still presents clear dangers to civilians. Farid explains why he thinks people still need weapons.
Because a lot of people live in villages near the Turkish border, and we cannot trust the Turkish side because they open fire on our side. Just a month ago, they injured some of our fighters. So people, especially in that area, buy weapons and guns to protect themselves.
Farid understands that EU countries have rigorous gun laws, that there are checks and controls when acquiring a weapon, stringent procedures and psychological tests prior to a person being granted a gun license. Mustafa says this procedure is a good thing in newly liberated areas such as Raqqa and Deir ez-Zor.
In newly liberated areas, people still dress ISIS style. Men there still have long beards. If we give people in those areas gun permits, they might end up using these guns against us. Their minds are still sullied by ISIS propaganda. You can never trust these people.
I ask Farid how he, a former arms dealer, feels about the fact that weapons and guns, such as those he's been selling, have killed hundreds of thousands of people in Syria. Does this weigh on his conscience at all?
We cannot say that the weapon is only bad. In Islam, there's a saying, you sell a weapon, that's haram or forbidden. But maybe this weapon will protect you. For example, when ISIS came here in June 2015, those with guns were able to protect themselves. Those without, they died. They lost their life.
Mustafa adds his 5 cents.
The Kurds have many enemies and they need to protect themselves. The world has many ways of doing this, just like a flower that has thorns to protect itself.
Both men now say they don't need the money from selling weapons, and that if there's peace in the area. As Farid concludes, inshallah, weapons take out lives, make our lives short. Philip Warwick, DW, Kobane.
DW.